helps us rise above the tides, because problems come in like tides, right? Sometimes problems just keep on coming. They don't stop. They just seems like they're never going to end. And so they just don't stop. Now, I pulled that up too high. So we're going to look at that. Last week we looked at how God helps us rise above the tides when you feel like giving up. Anybody felt like giving up at some point in your life? A lot of people right now are going through that, and so that's why we're doing that. And today is a little different because I named this one, How God Helps Us Rise Above the Tides When People Try and Drown You. Anybody ever had somebody try and drown you? I worked as a lifeguard one time, and you know, you always let somebody that's drowning basically almost drown before you grab them, because if you go out there while they're struggling, guess what they're doing? They're going to drown you. You know, they're going to climb you like a tree and push you under. And so they'll do that sometimes when you're baptizing people. I baptized people in the Jordan River, and it was cold, and this one lady climbed me like a tree to get out of the water. I mean, it was like legs and arms everywhere. It was like cold up in there. You know, it was like coldest water I'd ever been in. The best part of that was blow-drying my feet to get feeling back in them. But we're going to talk about how God helps us rise above, keep our head above water when the tides just keep coming and it feels like we're going to drown. You know, we're going to look at one of my favorite characters in the Bible today. I got a lot of favorite characters, but one of the best ones is a guy named Joseph. Who's ever heard of Joseph? He is so important in the Bible. There's like 14 chapters in Genesis that tell the story of Genesis. Nobody gets that many chapters except Jesus gets the whole New Testament. But nobody gets 14 chapters. So you can read about Joseph in the book of Genesis, and you can read how he handled setback after setback after setback. I mean, he just had trials and tribulations coming at him like crazy. And so for him, it was just like a tide. You know, a tide, when the tide's coming in, is there anything you can do about the tide coming in? No, not a thing. And if you have a high tide coming and a hurricane coming at the same time, that's a double whammy. But so for Joseph, the tides just kept coming in. And so we're going to look at several types of troubles that roll into our lives over the series. Last week we looked at when you give up. This week we're looking at when other people are causing you problems. Next week we're going to look at when they just leave you fearful, when the trials and tribulations you face make you afraid. There's a lot of fear out in our culture right now. So we're going to look at that too. But today we're looking at ones that other people cause us to have. And so one thing, Jesus said, in this world, you will experience trouble and trials and tribulation. Depends on which translation you're reading. But he didn't say, hey, look, when you become a Christian, everything is going to be fine. Too often in America, we think, hey, when I commit my life to Jesus, I'm going to be healthy, I'm going to be wealthy, I'm going to drive a Mercedes, all that kind of stuff. And that's just not what he promised. He said, in this world, you will experience troubles. And the problem is we don't always see those troubles the way God sees them. You see, God sees the beginning and the end. He sees the in-between. He sees how those trials and troubles are going to direct you and build you. And he knows the kind of person we're going to come in contact, we're going to become because of these. And so God he uses these troubles that come into our life, these trials that come into our life, to direct us. We think of trials and troubles and setbacks as exactly that. It's a setback from me getting to where I want to go. This COVID virus has been a setback to business people achieving their goals and us getting where we want to go, but really what it is trials and tribulations, setbacks like this are stepping stones to get us to where God wants us to be, to get us to where God wants us to be. And so we're going to learn that a little bit today. You can look through history at like the boll weevil when it came through the South, got the South off of just cotton as an industry and made them diversify. You know, in Louisiana, we've diversified from just oil, you know, and stuff like that. And so we need to continue doing that. But so we're going to look at these things. We've got to look at these as stepping stones to get us to where we want to go. Now, I want us to look at Joseph. Let me give you a little background on Joseph. Abraham, y'all remember him, God promised Abraham, you're going to be the father of a great nation. The only problem was Abraham was in his 90s when he made that promise. And so he said, you're going to be a father of a great nation of millions of people in your family. It's going to be a huge family. And Abraham's kind of scratching his head. Then he goes and has a son named Isaac. You remember the story? Abraham's going to kill Isaac, and God spares Isaac. And so then Isaac has a son named Jacob, whom God later changed his name to Israel. So hence, the nation of Israel came out of Jacob, and Jacob's name was changed to Israel. And that's where we get that. Now, Jacob had 12 sons from four different women. How many of you know that's a recipe for a problem right there? And so he had four different wives, and so it's a little bit of a mixed up family. So you've got 12 half brothers from four different women, a sister. That's just a recipe for a lot of competition among the kids, and all that. Joseph was the second youngest, but he was the favorite because he was born of Jacob's favorite wife, Rachel. And so he was the favorite, and we're going to look at that. So, but Joseph, because he was the favorite of his parents, his brothers hated him, and they sold him into slavery in Egypt, and he eventually became the second most powerful guy in the world. So we're going to look at how that happened, and we're going to look at some trials that Joseph went through, and I think you'll see yourself in some of these trials. So let's look at these. Joseph's trials. The first one is Joseph grew up in a home where he was ignored and mistreated. Joseph was ignored and mistreated. Look, it says in Genesis 37:3, Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other children because Joseph had been born to him in his old age. Now, you know, if you've got older parents, sometimes they don't parent you the way they did when they were in their 20s. Some of that's wisdom. Some of that's they just tired, you know. I mean, you know, but Jacob loved Joseph. That made him a target. So it goes on. So one day, Jacob made a special gift for Joseph, a beautiful robe. Now, we call that, if you went to Sunday school or Bible studies, they'll say Joseph's multicolored robe. It was probably sequined. It was probably had some bling to it. It was a bedazzled robe. But it was a special, it was a beautiful robe. But his brothers, look at this, hated Joseph. I don't know where the scriptures are up there. But his brothers hated Joseph because their father loved him more than the rest of them. They couldn't say a kind word to him or about him. I mean, his brothers hated him. And their father loved him more than the rest of them. That's why they hated him. They couldn't say a kind word to him. One night, Joseph had a dream. And when he told his brothers about it, they hated him more than ever. Now, here's the thing. Joseph's dream was that his brothers were going to bow to him. Who in here is the youngest child? Anybody in here youngest child? If you told all your older siblings, I had a dream, and y'all going to be bowing to me, how do you think that'd go over? Like a lead balloon, right? I mean, you know, it's not going to go over very well. And that's what happened with Joseph. They hated him more than ever. You may have grown up in a home like this, where you were bullied, where you were put down by your siblings, where it was a competition, and if you had a good idea, they'd take credit for it. I mean, maybe one parent liked you and the other didn't, or the other one was jealous of you because you got along more attention with the other parent. Maybe your parent was absent, or maybe they were alcoholic or a drug addict or just aloof or whatever. Maybe you had siblings that you did not get along with, And instead of a happy family, you grew up in a family with conflict and competition and all that kind of stuff. I want to ask you a question. Have you ever thought, if you've been through a kind of a rough background, have you ever thought about this? How does God want to use that in your life? You see, God doesn't waste anything. The things that we come through, he wants to use. If you thought about how God wants to use your background, your shape, the way you were developed, how does he want to use that in your life? Maybe he wants you to use your pain in a good way to help others who are going through what you've already been through or something like that. So Joseph's first trial was growing up in a home where no one liked him but his daddy. I mean, none of them. I mean, his mama probably liked him, but she died not long, you know, at some point. And so he had a bunch of brothers that hated him. And then number two, Joseph was rejected by his family and thrown into a pit. You can just put rejected. Not all of us are going to get thrown into a pit, but Joseph was. He was rejected by his family. Look at Genesis 37, 18. It says this, when Joseph's brothers saw him coming, they recognized him at a distance. Now, he had that coat on, right? He had some bling. They saw him coming. Some of y'all, you know, Brittany's got one of those face masks, got bling all over it, you know, and everything. And so they saw him coming, and they recognized him. As he approached, they made plans to kill him. You think you got it bad? Well, your siblings? Hopefully, I'm not asking you to raise your hands, but hopefully nobody in here has had siblings that were plotting to kill him. They made plans to kill him. Here comes that dreamer, they said. Come on, let's kill him and throw him in one of these cisterns. We can tell our father a wild animal is eating him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams. I mean, man, he had it bad. He had some brothers that were going to kill him. They weren't just going to put him down. They weren't just going to ignore him. They weren't just going to, you know, do a few things to him. They were going to kill the boy. I mean, not a good thing. Then in verse 21, it continues, but when Reuben heard the scheme, he came to Joseph's rescue. Let's not kill him, he said. Why should we shed any blood? Just throw him into this empty cistern here in the wilderness. Then he'll die without our laying a hand on him. Now, that sounds pretty bad right there. But it goes on to say Reuben was secretly planning to rescue Joseph and return him to his father. So he had one brother that kind of felt sorry for him, you know, half brother, you know. And then so when Joseph arrived, and I don't know what happened. I think Reuben must have gone off to take care of some business or something, chased a cow or whatever, I don't know. But when Joseph arrived, his brothers ripped off the beautiful robe he was wearing. They grabbed him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty and there was no water in it. So they throw him down in a dry well, basically. No getting out. He's down in this deep hole, which he's hoping, I'm sure, doesn't cave in on him and all that kind of stuff. And that's brutal. His whole family had turned on him. Now listen, one of the most painful things we go through growing up is being rejected. You know, it's being rejected. That's why none of us, you know, I always hated when they draw teams because you don't want to be the last one getting picked, right? Remember on the playground? You don't want to be the last one getting picked. And so, but rejection hurts. And so, you know, that's one of the hardest things. Most of us hadn't been tossed in a pit to die, but I would imagine at some point, some of us in this room and watching online have been rejected and it's painful. It hurts. And so, you know, they were going to kill him, and that was his rejection. Number three, Joseph was sold out for money. Now, some of y'all have had that happen in your work, in your workplace. And so for Joseph, his brothers threw him into the pit. And when they were about to leave him to die, they saw some traitors coming, and they got the idea to sell him. Listen to verse 26. It said, Judah said to his brothers, what will we gain by killing our brother? We'd have to cover up the crime. Instead of hurting him, let's sell him to those Ishmaelite traders. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. And all his brothers agreed. Now, this is back to the rejection thing. All of his brothers agreed. Hey, we're just going to sell him to these guys. So when the Ishmaelites, who were Midianite traders, came by, Joseph's brothers pulled him out of the cistern and sold him to them for 20 pieces of silver. And the traders took him to Egypt. Now, that's pretty brutal. They sold him into slavery. But doesn't that happen in some ways in our businesses? I mean, partners will sell out partners to get ahead. Bosses will throw employees under the bus so that they don't look bad and stuff like that. Relationships. I mean, people will leave relationships for somebody with more money. I mean, happens all the time. So that kind of stuff goes on. So Joseph was sold out. He was sold out for money. The fourth thing that happened to Joseph, you know, even though God's using this to get him positioned to do great things, the fourth thing happened was Joseph lost his identity. I mean, he was sold as a slave in a foreign country. And back home, everybody was going to think he was dead because here's what happened. It says, then the brothers killed a young goat, dipped his robe in the blood, and sent the beautiful robe to their father with this message. Listen to this message. Look at what we found. Doesn't this robe belong to your son? They didn't even say, hey, this is our brother's robe. Doesn't this belong to your son? Man, they're a bunch of stinkers, aren't they? I mean, they're terrible. I mean, their father recognized it immediately. Yes, he said, this is my son's robe. A wild animal must have eaten him. Joseph was clearly been torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his clothes, dressed himself in burlap. He mourned deeply. Aren't y'all glad we don't do that anymore? Burlap is not comfortable. I mean, he dressed himself in burlap. He mourned deeply for his son for a long time. His family all tried to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. He said, I will go to my grave mourning for my son, he would say, and then he would weep. So nobody was coming looking for Joseph, okay? He's dead, so he's lost everything back here. And you might have experienced that. Maybe you were married and went through a divorce, and now you're no longer a husband or a wife like you identified yourself with, and that can be, something. And then your friends are kind of weirded out because you have all these couple friends, and you go through this divorce, and it's like, all right, who gets to keep the friends, But you're single, so it just doesn't fit anymore. And so you lose this idea. You go through an identity thing. Or maybe you lost your position at work. A lot of guys get a lot of identity, and women too, from their job. I'm a CEO of a company. People say, who are you? Well, I'm a bank manager, or I'm a lawyer, or I'm this or that, people will say. And that's not who we are. It's what we do, but we get a lot of our identity out of it. You lose that job, and it's weird. I mean, even if you don't get a lot of your identity, I remember as God was moving me into ministry many, many, many years ago, and I worked in the hospital field, and this hospital fired me one day, and they fired me, let me go, and there was one guy actually trained him to replace me. I'd been doing this. He replaced three of us, but what happened right after that was one of my workers, one of my supervisors, had a major stroke and was up there in the hospital, and so I went up there, and it happened like the same day, and nobody knew that I wasn't who I had been earlier in that day, which was one of the managers of this hospital. And so my identity had changed, and it's a weird thing. Maybe you've gone through something like that. Maybe you're a parent, and all of a sudden the kids are grown, and it's like, it changes. Let me just give you a hint. Our job as parents is to raise them to launch, not stay, okay? Launch. That means they're paying their own bills. Somebody say amen. Not just that they're gone, they're paying their own bills. And somebody else say amen to that. They're paying their own bills, all right? That's a happy day. And so we're paid to do that. But it changes because if you've always identified yourself as mama, that the one they come to all the time, it's a shift, it's a change. But he lost that identity. Number five, Joseph, and let me just tell you this, God's going to give you a new identity. When you go through that, he's got one better than what you went through. That mom role changes, that CEO or whatever it was you were, God's going to do something different. I like what I'm doing right now a whole lot better than what I was doing in hospitals. And so kind of glad I'm not in one right now, working. But number five, Joseph was forced to take a job he did not want. Who in here has ever had to do that? I mean, take a job. Or maybe you took a job, you thought it was one thing, and they changed it on you when you took it. And it became something different. Or you got into it and you go, woo, I did not sign up for this. And I can remember taking a job. I was looking for a job when I was graduating college, and I'm thinking, man, I'm looking for something in management because I've done the labor thing, and I don't really want to do that, And I'm looking, and I signed on with this company, and they had two hospitals that they managed right there in my hometown. What'd they do? They sent me to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I mean, now, they had us. What are the five places you want to live? All mine were in Georgia, I mean, it was like, but they sent me to Baton Rouge, which is where I found out nuns were not sweet little old ladies. I was working at Our Lady of the Lake Hospital, and those nuns were tough, man, but you've had to take a job maybe that you didn't want, and my first day on the job there was an 18-hour day. They picked me up at the hotel and brought me back to the hotel. My supervisor did. I didn't have a day off for 2 months. So when I was looking at that prime truck driver that said I'm working 12 hours a day and he quit, I'm going, suck it up, buttercup. Get a life. I mean, learn how to work. I mean, come on. But, maybe you had a job that you didn't really want. I know know people that have jobs, but they got to pay the bills. They got a family to support. It's maybe not what they want. Joseph, I mean, none of us had it this bad. I mean, Joseph goes from being pampered and living in his father's home, being a slave in a foreign land. It says, meanwhile, the Midianite traders arrived in Egypt where they sold Joseph to Potiphar. Now, if you get sold, that's not the same as going to take a job that you can quit. He worked for Potiphar, who was an officer of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and a captain of the palace guard. Now, what that would mean, basically, I read that and I'm thinking, if he runs, he's got an army chasing him. I mean, you know, so he's done. I mean, you know, here, you know, and so, he's in this job that he never wanted to do. But what Joseph do? Whatever Joseph did, no matter where he was, he did the best he could with what God gave him. I mean, he served God with his whole heart. He tried to honor God with everything he did. And because of that, God blessed him. Joseph actually changed the meaning of working for people. He worked for God and not for a human master. Because he didn't work for Potiphar. He didn't work for Pharaoh. He worked for God. He did everything he did as if God were the one he was trying to please. And that's why he got blessed. But it also led to his last trial. Joseph, number six, was punished for doing the right thing. You may do the right thing and be punished for it. One of the things that led to my leaving this hospital I was working at was I wouldn't falsify reports for OSHA inspections and stuff like that. And so, you may do the right thing, but you may be punished for that. You know, you may be punished for that. And sometimes we get ourselves in trouble. Sometimes we do the right thing. And this is what happened to Joseph. Let me read it. So Potiphar gave Joseph complete administrative responsibility over everything he owned. With Joseph there, he didn't have to worry about a thing except what kind of food to eat. That's pretty good life, isn't it? He didn't have to worry about anything. And then it says, Joseph was a very handsome and well-built young man, and Potiphar's wife soon began to look at him lustfully. Come and sleep with me, she demanded. But Joseph refused. Look, he told her, my master trusts me with everything in his entire household. No one here has more authority than I do. He has held back nothing from me except you because you are his wife. How could I do such a wicked thing? It would be a great sin against who? God. She kept putting pressure on Joseph day after day. But he refused to sleep with her. He's doing the right thing. He refused to sleep with her. And he kept out of her way as much as possible. One day, however, when no one else was around, he went in to do his work. She came and grabbed him by his cloak, his outer garment, demanding, come on, sleep with me. Joseph tore himself away, but he left his cloak in her hand as he ran from the house. When she saw that she was holding on to his cloak and that he had fled, now he did the right thing. He ran away. And sometimes, guys, let me just tell you, when there's a temptation, you got to remove yourself from the place of temptation. It's a great example. It's not what we're talking about, but you just need to get out of there. You need to get out of there. I needed to walk out of that room with all those donuts earlier, you know what I mean? Some of y'all need to do the same, but she called out to her servants. Soon all the men came running. Look, she said, my husband has brought this Hebrew slave here to make fools of us. He came into my room to rape me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream, he ran outside and got away, but he left his cloak with me. She kept the cloak with her until her husband came home. Then she told him her story. That Hebrew slave you brought into our house tried to come in and fool around with me, she said. But when I screamed, he ran outside, leaving his cloak with me. Potiphar was furious when he heard his wife's story and how Joseph had treated her. So Potiphar punished him for doing the right thing. Joseph's thinking about God and honoring his boss, but yet he was punished. So number seven, we're going to look at this next one. Number seven is Joseph was forgotten by people he helped. What do you do when your troubles are caused by other people? None of these horrible things that Joseph suffered were his fault. None of them. So Joseph was thrown in prison, and he just keeps serving the Lord. I mean, that's what Joseph did. He just kept serving the Lord. And pretty soon, he's an assistant to the warden in the jail, all right? And when he's in jail, he helps a couple of guys, just to make, 14 chapters shorter. He's in jail. He helps a couple of guys. He tells one of them, you're going to be restored. The taster, the wine taster, you're going to be restored. He tells the baker, sorry, dude, off of your head, but, you know, you're going to be killed. And then here's what he tells the steward. He said, please remember me and do me a favor when things go well for you. Mention me to Pharaoh so that he might let me out of this place. For I was kidnapped from my homeland, the land of the Hebrews, and now I'm here in prison, and I did nothing to deserve it. And so the baker goes on and gets killed. The wine taster, the wine steward, he gets out and he's restored. But he just totally forgets Joseph. Look at verse 23. But the Pharaoh's cupbearer, however, forgot all about Joseph, never giving him another thought. I mean, he totally forgot about Joseph. He totally forgot about Joseph, even after he helped the guy. Listen, some of y'all have helped people in the past. Some of y'all have helped people in the past, and they're coming to help you. And when you needed help from them, they weren't anywhere to be around. I remember a guy one time, he was having some difficulties, and he said, man, he said, I helped my buddies. He'd been in the Army. He was a Ranger. He said, I've helped my guys with different things, and he said, man, I just needed some money one day, and he said, man, that won't even answer my phone call. Maybe you've had something like that happen where you've helped people, and it came back to bite you. And that's what's happened to Joseph here, and that's happened to us. So what kept Joseph going? You know, I mean, Joseph went through all this stuff, and none of it was his fault. All these things that happened to him were not his fault, but yet he remained faithful to God. So how did he do that? Number one, Joseph depended on God's presence no matter where he was. Joseph, he didn't depend on his own knowledge, his own skill. He was a punk kid when he first got thrown into that pit. Spoiled rotten, probably wouldn't have been a good worker like he is now. He wouldn't have worked that 18-hour day, you know, back then. But here's what happened. He depended on God's presence no matter where he was. So here's some things you can write down. He depended on God's presence when he was in the pit. Write that down. It says these patriarchs, that's his brothers, were jealous of their brothers. See, we call them the patriarchs. They're a bunch of wicked dudes. I mean, they killed their brother, went out to kill their brother. He said these patriarchs were jealous of their brother Joseph, so they sold him to be a slave in Egypt. But look at this next part. But who was with him? But God was with him. No, God was with him. Listen, God doesn't promise to spare us what we're going to go through. Remember, Jesus said you're going to have trials in this world. But God will be with us every single step of the way. He was with Joseph every step of the way. He will be with you every step of the way. God was with him. And like I said, I don't know what you're going through. Whatever it is, whether it's work, whether it's this virus, if you've got the virus, or somebody's had the virus, whatever, if you got the virus, hope you're watching at home. God will be with you every single step of the way, no matter what you're going through. And here it is again in Genesis 39, 1 and 2. When Joseph was taken to Egypt by the Ishmaelite traders, he was purchased by Potiphar, an Egyptian officer. Potiphar was a captain of the guard for the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. The next verse says, the Lord was with Joseph, so he succeeded in everything that he did. So that leads to number two. Joseph depended on God's presence when he was working for Potiphar. Write that down. When he's working for Potiphar. And so because God blessed Joseph, everything went good for Potiphar. Everything went good for Potiphar. The Lord was with him. He became successful. Potiphar realized that. Potiphar realizes that, and here's what he said. It says in verse 3, Potiphar noticed this, that God was blessing Joseph, and that everything Joseph did was blessed, and it made him money. He said, and realized the Lord was with Joseph, giving him success in everything he did. I want you to notice, this is a non-believer that's seeing God at work in Joseph. So what happens when we're honoring God with our work? When we're working as unto the Lord, people that don't believe are going to see God's hand in that. This pleased Potiphar so much that he gave Joseph a promotion. He made him his personal assistant. He put him in charge of his entire household and everything he owned. From the day Joseph was put in charge of his master's household and property, the Lord began to bless Potiphar's household. So for Joseph's sake, all of his household affairs ran smoothly and his crops and livestock flourished. So God made Potiphar wealthier and more favored because of Joseph being in charge of all his stuff. But you remember I read just a minute ago, it said Joseph was a handsome dude, and Potiphar's wife started looking at him lustfully. She notices him, and she's trying to seduce him over and over and over again. He resists, but eventually she accuses him of trying to rape her. So he's thrown in prison. So Joseph depended on God's presence, write this down, when he was in prison. God was with him in the pit. He's with him working in a foreign land, and he's with him in prison. Remember, Jesus said, this world you're going to have tribulation, but he's going to be with us. Joseph was put in prison for something he didn't commit. So it says in verse 20. So he took Joseph. He threw him into prison where the king's prisoners were held. And there he remained. I would think that's like maximum security. If you're where the king's prisoners are, you're in trouble. All right? And there he remained. But look at verse 21. But the Lord was what? With Joseph in the prison and showed him his faithful love. And the Lord made Joseph a favorite with the prison warden. If you're going to be in prison, you want to be the favorite of the warden, all right? Before long, the warden put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners and over everything that happened in the prison. See, God blessed him over and over and over again because he remained faithful. And in verse 23, it says, the warden had no more worries because Joseph took care of everything. The Lord was with him and caused everything he did to succeed. See, God made Joseph successful in everything, and it blessed those around him because of that. And here's the point. God was with Joseph every step of the way. Joseph depended on God's presence being there with him. You can depend on God's presence being there with you, no matter what you're going through. Whether it's a work deal, whether it's a relationship deal, whether it's a virus deal, whether it's fear of the riots and all the unrest and what are the politics going to be and all that kind of stuff. No matter what it is, how you're going to pay your bills, you can depend on God being there with you. Difficult times aren't going to keep God from being there with you. Number two, Joseph depended on not just on God's presence, but on God's plan and promises, no matter how long it took. Remember, Joseph had had a dream where God spoke to him and said, your brothers are going to kneel to you, you're going to rule over them. And so he held on to that promise. He held on to that dream, even though it took a long time. And so he held on to that promise that God was going to do great things with him. Now, as the story goes on, Joseph eventually gets out of prison. He goes up to the number two spot under Pharaoh, and he's de facto, he's the most powerful man in the world because Egypt ruled at that time, and so he saves the country because of his wisdom that God's given him, and then as it would be, his brothers had to come to from Israel to buy grain from him. Now they didn't recognize him, and it's a great story. He kind of played with them a little bit. If you've read that story, you know he puts some of his silver in one of their bags, and then they go out and catch him, and he accuses them of stealing, and says, you bring back your youngest brother or I'm going to kill him, and keeps one of the brothers and goes through all that. And eventually, Joseph lets them know who he is. What do you think they said when Joseph said, I'm Joseph, the one you sold into slavery? I'd tell you what they thought. Oh, crud, we're going to die. I promise you, that's what they, Reuben's going, man, I told you. Judah's going, oh, man. They're all, we're going to die. But here's what Joseph said. Joseph replied, don't be afraid of me. Am I God that I can punish you? You intended to harm me, but God intended it all for what? Good. He brought me into this position so I could save the lives of many people. God uses these things to direct. They did evil to Joseph, but God used it to get Joseph into the position where he wanted him and to make him the man that he wanted him to be, all at the same time, so he could be used. And so Joseph depended on God's plan and on his promises. And so Joseph was able to say that. Number three, Joseph depended on God's help in every challenge. He depended on God's help in every challenge. I mean, over and over and over again, Joseph had to depend on the Lord. I mean, he's thrown into a pit. He can't climb out. He's sold into slavery. There's nothing he can do about it. He's working in a foreign country. Everybody back home thinks he's dead. He's thrown in prison. He just keeps serving the Lord and being faithful and dependent on God. One day, Pharaoh has a bad dream. You remember, he'd interpreted some dreams in the jail. And Pharaoh has this bad dream, and none of the people can tell Pharaoh what the dream was. You know, Pharaoh's not going to tell him the dream, so they can interpret it. He said, you tell me the dream, and you interpret it. And I'm thinking, man, you're really making it hard on him. And then finally, the wine taster says this. He said, I remember a guy in jail. I had a dream, and he told me that you were going to restore me, and you did. I bet he can interpret your dream. So they pulled Joseph out of prison. And then Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream last night, and no one here can tell me what it means. But I have heard that when you hear about a dream, you can interpret it. It's beyond my power to do this, Joseph replied. But God can tell you what it means. But God can tell you what it means and set you at ease. So he explains this dream to Pharaoh. And here's what Pharaoh says. Pharaoh said to Joseph, verse 39, since God has revealed the meaning of the dreams to you, clearly no one else is as intelligent or wise as you are. You will be in charge of my court, and all my people will take orders from you. Only I, sitting on my throne, will have a higher rank than yours. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the entire land of Egypt. Now this is a dude that was a slave when he came. Let me tell you, it doesn't matter where you are, God can use you for great things. It doesn't matter what your start is. It matters where you end up. And here he is. He was a slave. He was in prison. And now he's number two to the Pharaoh of Egypt. Then Pharaoh removed his signet ring from his hand and placed it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in fine linen clothing and hung a gold chain around his neck. Then he had Joseph ride in the chariot reserved for his second in command. And wherever Joseph went, the command was shouted, kneel down. So Pharaoh put Joseph in charge of all of Egypt. And Pharaoh said to him, I am Pharaoh, but no one will lift a hand or a foot in the entire land of Egypt without your approval. I mean, what a story. Joseph remained faithful. Now, I'm not saying you're going to be the next vice president. But God has a plan for you. God has a plan for you. And he will use open doors and closed doors to direct you to where he wants you to be. And I want God to be able to say that of people from River Church. That I want him to say that obviously when people see you at work, obviously you're filled with the Spirit and wisdom of God. I want people to be able to say that about us. That's what the king told Joseph. And here's the thing. I don't know what you're going through. I know we're all experiencing crazy, devastating things because of this virus. Maybe you're a business owner and you've lost most of your business. Some of it's back. Maybe your job, you don't know if you're going to keep that job. You don't know if you're going to have a job. Business is real slacking and you're not sure. Or maybe you lost your job and you don't think they're going to be able to call you back. I don't know what it is you're going through, but I've got three questions I want to close with. Will you depend on God's presence, number one? Number two, will you depend on God's plan and promise? Will you hold on to God's plans and promise? You know God has a plan and a purpose for you. Will you hold on to that even though it doesn't seem like it's working out right now? Number three, will you depend on God's help in every challenge? Will you depend on his presence? Will you depend on his plan and promise? Will you depend on his help no matter what you're going on? You see, I want us to see these trials and tribulations, what you're going through now. You know, an interruption would have been if this COVID thing would have lasted a couple of weeks. This is a major shift. We're going on 6 months. And so what is God directing you? Look for how God is shaping you and changing you and directing you to where he wants you to go. Let's pray.